Welcome to the program for Thursday, April 26, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thursday in the 3 o'clock hours, always industry chatter. My guest today is Chris Hummel, Chief Commercial Officer for Siemens Enterprise Communications. And Chris, it is good to see you. Thank you for joining me today.
Good afternoon, Francis. Thanks for having me.
I made you come down on a semi-rainy day from New York City, but I appreciate you coming to be here today.
Very happy to be here.
Start off by telling us, please, what Siemens Enterprise Communications does for the federal government.
So Siemens Enterprise Communications, just to start off as a little bit of background, is a joint venture of a private equity company called Gores Group based out of L.A. and Siemens AG, the big global conglomerate that most people would know. We separated from Siemens AG about 3 years ago. But for 160 years, we've been working in the area of what I would call enterprise communications. So this is helping organizations, whether they be commercial or public, in working with their data networking, their communications, their unified communications, and the implementation of these kind of things. So in the federal government, as you can imagine, there's a lot of demand for these kind of things, right? A lot of demand, in particularly historically, the federal government has been a center of innovation that's then passed on to the commercial sector. That's kind of changed recently more in the other direction. But, you know, we work with a number of organizations, whether it be in the civilian agencies like NASA or the Veterans Administration or the military sector with the Air Force or the Navy or these kind of places, helping them from the very basics of their kind of telephony and communications infrastructure to their data networking, and then obviously a lot of the applications around that, whether it be mobility or video or these kinds of things.
The mobility piece of it ties into about 86,000 different things now when it comes to government, whether it's technology or whatever. What are the customers that you deal with and the potential customers that you deal with asking you the most right now about mobility?
Well, the most important thing, or the most, I would say, maybe not important, but the most active conversation here is really about the bring-your-own-device phenomenon, where people are now looking at what they use for their personal life or at home, and they're saying, can I use my iPhone or my Android? Can I use it in my corporate or government environment? And what's happening is most of it is just focused on, can I use that for my applications, my email, my approvals, purchases, get access to our department's information, or so on and so forth. The struggle really comes because you've got this tension between what the individual, now let's say an employee of a department, right, or a federal agency, what they want to do versus the needs of, let's say, the CIO of that particular department. How do I maintain security? How do I maintain control over where that data goes? How do I make sure that when Chris is downloading the latest poker game from, you know, his iPhone or the App Store or whatever, that he's not downloading also a tracing virus or something like that? So the first part is really bring your own device. What that leads into, though, is a very interesting conversation around the concept of adding mobile versus being mobile. And so the real, where we're trying to change the conversation a little bit is, you know, most agencies are focused on, how do I get mobile access to my employees? How do I give mobile access to my constituency, right? So the citizenry, of getting them access to the information of my particular services. The question that we're starting to now encounter and ask, and it's, Francis, to be honest, it's still relatively small, meaning it's not widespread, but is the idea of really making mobility an advantage and changing the way the department or the agency operates in using mobile capabilities to improve that, right? Because what we see is three major trends across the government trying to focus on productivity, trying to focus on, which would mean lowering cost as well as becoming more productive, engagement, both with their own employees and with the citizenry, and then this concept of resiliency and security, which we were talking about before. So in that context, mobility is now shifting a conversation where you used to talk about mobile access and now really talking about being mobile and making mobile part of the fabric of where the government operates.
A lot there to tear into. Let's start with the level of sophistication that employees require out of mobile technology. The concept of doing anything beyond, say, email and maybe a few very, very unsophisticated applications, to me, on an iPhone or another device of that type is bananas. And yet, it seems that a lot of agencies are putting a lot of effort into making sure that people can do very sophisticated things on small mobile devices.
Right.
Are you seeing, either with your federal customers or with your corporate private sector customers, that the end users are actually getting that sophisticated with small mobile devices, or are those kinds of enterprise applications limited primarily to tablet devices and laptops?
Well, you have to deal with, and what people are now getting into, is the form factor, right? So on a phone or a smart device versus a tablet, you have a very different screen size. And as I was talking about before, most people are just looking at access. They're saying, how can I do on my tablet or on my phone what I can do on my desktop or my laptop? When in reality, you can't do all the things that you do on a desktop, but you can now do new things. So you start talking about, when you were talking about the sophistication of the users, it's not the level of sophistication of the users. It's the sophistication of what you can do on that device.
Yes, and that's what I was referring
right.
to.
Right, and how you can do it in a way that doesn't require a complete re-education of the entire employee base. And, you know, Apple had a very interesting strategy with the iPhone. If you look at the iPhone now, it's a very complicated device. But when it first came out, there was only a couple of things you could do with it. And they almost kind of gradually changed the way consumers adopted this in a way that meant now you can use it as a fully functional device. And I think that was that's a great strategy for Apple. Unfortunately, not all of us are Apple and can't dominate the market like that.
Much as we would like to. The concept of internally faced versus externally faced is a note that I made as you were speaking earlier. The difference in strategy and the difference in approach to the mobile revolution as far as what you're doing within your organization as opposed to in a government environment speaking to the citizenry that you serve. You mentioned the constituency.
Yeah, so it's interesting. If you look at – and this challenges both us as a supplier but also the various agencies and groups and our private sector customers as well. They're starting to get into how do I actually consume applications, which is effectively IT, right? Here we're talking primarily about communications applications, but you get into situations where you say traditionally what has happened is the IT department has gone through a long RFP process, worked with the procurement team, the legal team, the finance team, et cetera, gone through a multi-year program to get to a decision, and then gone through a multi-year change of the infrastructure. Well, now you have things like you have these online app stores. And so what's happening is we're starting to try and figure out how we can make the consumption of those bite-sized, digestible applications easier for the employees. So if you're looking to do something, your IM, your instant messaging, look at that as an application. If you're looking at your email sign-on, you're looking at your video conferencing or your web collaboration or anything else, look at that as a sort of a bite-sized piece that actually you can download from an internal corporate or department-wide website. That's a change in the way that IT is being delivered. That goes back to the question about, again, even in mobility and the sophistication of users and that. That's how I download all my personal applications, so why wouldn't that be how I do my corporate or my government applications as well?
You mentioned, you used the term, how do I consume? That's a healthy question, it strikes me, because we're starting to finally move away from how do I use this thing,
right,
and getting to the question, what do I do with it, and here's my mission, how do I use this and the other tools that I have at my disposal to accomplish the mission? Am I on the right track there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, as I was talking about this productivity, engagement, and resiliency, you know, we've kind of put that under an umbrella called the connected state. And when you think about using your communications for the mission of your agency, we're doing a lot of work with state governments as well. And, you know, they're very concerned, just as the federal agencies are, on interaction with the citizenry. And so social media becomes an important element. I'll give you an example, right? If the mission of your organization is public safety, people are now starting to use text to call for help. Right, the traditional, I dial 911, I get a response. People are now using their mobile devices, and so they're using text or they're using some other form. If your contact center, your call center, your command and control emergency response isn't equipped to handle text, How do you deal with the mission of your particular group to provide that emergency service? It's a great question.
And it yields another one that I want to ask you about when we come back from the break. My guest is Chris Hummel of Siemens on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
From AFMA. For military service members and veterans, there's no better place to go for your life insurance needs than AFMA. Our level term to age 50 policy is only $19 per month for $400,000 of coverage, and every member's policy comes with AFMA's unique survivor assistance services. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
Johnny Holiday for the Memorial Day Festival for Wounded Warriors at Great Meadow, home of the Gold Cup in Plains, Virginia. May 27th, a spectacular event is being staged for Wounded Warriors. Music, air show, and fun for the family. Free barbecue, beer, wine tasting, and more. To sponsor a tent, go to bfwwt.org or call 301-296-4408. For a limited time only, tickets are free. 301-296-4408 or go to bfwwt.org.
This week's Experts in Health topic is stress management, featuring Dr. Farzaneh Sabi, OBGYN with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at the new Kaiser Permanente Gaithersburg Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sabi. The day-to-day demands of life in Washington, D.C. can be stressful. If unchecked, stress can lead to more serious medical conditions such as sleeplessness, high blood pressure, and even stroke. Here are a few tips I provide my patients on how to cope with stress. 1. Stay active. A simple walk around the block can be enough to clear your mind. 2. Eat more fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. 3. Set aside time every day to do one thing you enjoy. 4. Get more sleep. And 5. Learn to say no by accepting that you can't do it all. Contact your doctor if you're feeling anxious, depressed, or have overwhelming emotions for 2 or more weeks.
Dr. Sabi was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Many factors affect job satisfaction. Hours, teammates, and opportunity can all make or break an experience. That's why it was an impressive achievement when 100% of employees surveyed recently reported they were proud to work for Acuity Inc. With a 766% growth rate and recognition as a best place to work, Acuity is attracting talented, passionate professionals and keeping them happy. Learn more. Visit myacuity.com/careers.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract Series 83500.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. Guess what? The Troubled Asset Relief Program is still very much alive. It has a new Special Inspector General. We'll speak to her about how well TARP has been managed in its sunset years. Plus, the Commerce Department is getting into the shared services and cutting redundancy movement. The CIO will tell us how. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My industry chatter guest today is Chris Hummel from Siemens. You mentioned something before the break, and you talked about you gave the example of someone who is in an emergency situation and they text in, and what if a particular government agency at whatever level is not equipped to receive that? I wonder what level of responsibility governments feel at all levels, not just the federal government, to be able to communicate with a constituent in what variety of potential ways, and how you winnow that process down. What are you seeing some of the state governments that you're dealing with doing as far as that decision-making process?
Yeah, this is the big difference between the public sector and the private sector, is the private sector makes most of its decisions based primarily on cash, right? Money, financial decisions, whereas the federal government, state government, local government have a social contract where they have to supply certain services to the whole citizenry. They can't segment it and choose a segment that they don't want to play with. So what we're seeing in the state governments really is they're probably sensing some of the financial austerity earlier and starting to really come under fire for cost. And the only way that they can provide citizens with the services that they normally would expect and demand is they actually have to cut costs. And actually what's happening is a very interesting, somewhat positive approach, is actually the legacy technologies that most of them hold, the sort of analog communications in our particular sector, are actually more expensive to maintain than the new IP-based technologies, the internet protocol. So what's happening is we're walking in and we're looking. We did a survey of some customers recently. They said they could save anywhere from 20 to 40% on their operating costs. It was moving to the new technology. That also then opens them up to do all kinds of things to engage the citizenry better. So now you have, you know, we were in a meeting with various state officials that wanted to tweet. Right, they wanted to go out to the citizenry. You can see in the presidential election, certainly social media and social communications are becoming a critical part of both sides of the debate, so to speak. The state governments, because of the financial crunch that they've been under, are really starting to almost have to move faster. And in adopting new technology, they're finding new avenues to actually spend less money, do more with less. Essentially,
this showed up from my perspective first in the federal government with the whole discussion about apps for mobile devices.
Yep.
I guess it's been 2 or 3 years now when federal agencies were trying to figure out how do we do it? What do we do? And at that time, the discussion revolved primarily around native apps. And so you were trying to say, okay, we probably want to have an iPhone app because there's a quantity of users there. But then technically you're discriminating against Android users and BlackBerry users and Palm OS users. And at that time, whatever the Nokia OS was, right, they still had some market share then. That seems to have mitigated itself somewhat because of market conditions more than anything. But there still is that consideration in federal government that we have to do both of these. And as you said, in the private sector, you have the luxury of deciding, well, we don't really need to communicate with those people because there's not enough money there, and you can't do that in the public sector.
So it's interesting. What you're kind of alluding to is this de facto condition that everybody is working with heterogeneous technical environments, and trying to make those all work together is absolutely critical. You know, one of the promises of unified communications a decade ago when it was really sort of talked about was bringing together all your different communication channels in a way to support your operations and drive better improvement in performance results, whatever, so on and so forth. And yet we're still 10 years later talking primarily about how to make things work together. Right. And so what you're talking about is the Symbian operating system with BlackBerry and the iOS with Apple and the Android, right? And so on and so forth. And everybody is still focused on how do I hook A into B rather than once I hook A into B, what can I actually do with it? And that's really where the conversation needs to go.
What drives that? Because that's a cultural / mindset thing in my view.
Well, I mean, part of it is just the reality of the way people have purchased. Right? The way the industry has promoted. I mean, I'll put us in there as well. We've promoted very individual sort of solutions that have now, everybody has bought whatever the latest and greatest is. And now they have this mishmash of various technologies that now, how do you weave them together into a fabric, right? Mm-hmm. How do you actually get them to talk together? So our engineering efforts, our work with our customers, and this is coming very much from the federal government, is to say, you know, I want to be able to work with other agencies, How do I do that yet? My spend and my budget is only responsible for my area. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do.
Is it too late to smash the genie back in the bottle on that, though?
No, it's not too late. What you now need to do is you now need to build the technologies such that they are more universal, right? You need to build them so that they are more interoperable. Big words, right? But you need to make them such that you're not jeopardizing or excluding a particular technology. Now, at some point, you know, this is the life cycle of technology, you have to give up on an old platform, right? At some point, as you said, market conditions will make it such that whether it's 10%, 5%, 1%, 0.1%, right, each market dictates a little bit differently, but you will have to get out of there. But for now, right, there's sort of this understanding out there, well, gosh, for me to move to new communications technology, for me to incorporate it in my agency, I need to do a whole rip and replace. I need to rip out my network. I need to rip out my telephony system. I need to rip out my video, everything, and start from fresh. That's a very expensive exercise. And when you're doing it in a time where the federal IT budget is roughly about $80 billion, excuse me. I wish it were $80 million, right? It's $80 billion. $80 billion, and it's not going up. Right. If anything, you know, this new CIO said that it's coming down. And so how do you actually make it all work but still adopt the new innovation that's out there? Right. You can't stop. You can't stop and just say, all right, I'm just going to keep doing what I do today. Because as we talked about, there's that pressure from below where the employees, the citizenry, so on and so forth, they're demanding that the agencies and the departments actually provide them different services, better services through new channels, all those kind of things. And the focus is, yes, you can do the rip and replace. We're trying to focus on giving you alternatives, is actually an evolutionary approach.
When we come back from the break, I want to ask you the money question about BYOD. My guest is Chris Hummel of Siemens on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter, and our conversation continues in just a moment.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and or complex and or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
Governments at all levels are operating in an era of fiscal austerity. Though revenues may be falling, the demand for critical services continues. Join host Michael Keegan as he welcomes Seth Diamond, Commissioner of the New York City Department of Homeless Services, as they discuss New York City's response to the challenge of homelessness. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Calling out Medicare scams. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Diabetes patients, beware when you pick up the phone. calls claiming to be from Medicare are not. If they offer you free glucose meters or diabetic test strips, that's a red flag because Medicare never makes calls offering supplies or services. Gary Cantrell is Deputy Inspector General for Investigations with HHS's Office of the Inspector General.
The scammers sometimes use names like Medicare or Medicare, Medicare, in order to trick the listener.
The number one no-no is giving away your personal information over the phone.
Don't provide callers with your Medicare number, bank account information, or credit card numbers.
If you think you're the target of a scam, report to the OIG hotline at 1-800-HHS-TIPS. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Registration is now open for the all-new Management of Change event, featuring interactive sessions around cloud, mobility, and security, and a future technology expo, June 3rd through 5th at the Hyatt Regency, Cambridge, Maryland. This government industry training forum is hosted by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council. Register and learn more at actgov.org/managementofchange. That's actgov.org/managementofchange.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Chris Hummel. He is the Chief Commercial Officer for Siemens, my guest on Industry Chatter today. And I promised the money question on bring your own device. Now, there's no question that bring your own device is good for the end user. They get to choose whatever they want to use and can use the device that they're most comfortable with. It's good for companies like you that support the bring your own device setup at federal agencies. Is it good, though, for the federal agencies themselves? Does it ultimately lead to better productivity, better engagement, better resiliency, to use the three points that you talked about earlier?
So if you look forward into the future, clearly it helps productivity, because why has this mega trend, as we call it, of mobility, or this mobility revolution, taken hold so fast? It is because people can use it. They do find a benefit out of it. They find the ability to consume information, to use communications, et cetera, much easier in this kind of more digestible format. So clearly, from a long-term perspective, the productivity is definitely there. It means that engagement, adoption is going to be much higher. So the benefits, again, to the agency, to the government as a whole, to the individual department, is that adoption of the things that they want, actually, if delivered in this kind of format, are much higher. In the past, you would have, you know, applications or directives sent out. So they would be bulletins. They would be promptly ignored or deleted, like most of us do. So the productivity gains are, the engagement are there. Where the real challenge comes is in the resiliency. And this is the challenge. It is the challenge around the security in particular, right? We talked earlier about the entitlement and the social contract with citizens, but with employees, you get into the question of security. And so the BYOD, bring your own device, really starts the question for CIOs, the security. Can I make this secure if I just let anybody come in and actually use whatever device they want in whatever format, download whatever apps they want, so on and so forth? What we are starting to see is a reality that this is not a question anymore. This is just the way it is, and there is no going back. The genie's out of the bottle. And what CIOs need to do is now really look at – and I should say – sorry, I just digress for 1 second. It's not just the CIOs. Right? It's the agency head. It's the cabinet level member or the department head or whatever that really need to look at this and how to use it. Is the security elements become more difficult, more taxing, more trying on the CIO. He still wants scalability. He or she still wants scalability, still wants security, still wants to manage professionally everything that they're doing with the best resources they have. But now technology is very far advanced, even beyond when this BYOD phenomenon kind of started, where you can now segregate certain data flows or voice traffic so that it doesn't actually impact the whole system. You know, we've been working on a web collaboration technology the last couple of years that actually can pass through the firewall because you don't actually load anything onto your computer. It's just an executable file that sort of wipes itself away. So, you know, when you're looking to do conversations or video chats or so on and so forth through the web, you now actually can do that in a safe environment. And so, you know, like it or not, it's kind of here to stay. There is definitely a benefit to the end user. I think in the long term, there's a benefit to the agency and the department as well. But there is the reality of the security that needs to be handled now.
The element of the productivity piece that we have not talked about yet that I think we should is telework.
Yep.
Every agency is under orders to facilitate telework, to make it happen. I recall from Martha Johnson's testimony about the scandal where she singled out the GSA's headquarters, which housed 2,500 people and will very soon house 4,500 people because they have initiated a big telework program there. They've pushed that very hard. What are agencies struggling with that you talk to when it comes to telework, either to understand or to implement, to make their workforces who aren't in the office anymore or aren't in the office part of the time anymore as productive or more productive than they are when they're sitting in their cubes?
Yeah, it's one of the fascinating kind of cultural changes that are going on. You know, in my company, Siemens Enterprise Communications, 80% of our staff in the United States is remote, is not in an office. And I know there are other companies that are doing the same sort of thing. The challenge it brings up is partially technology, because you have to enable somebody who's remote and give them the same level of infrastructure that they normally have, applications, technology, infrastructure, networking, whatever, that they would have in a physical building. And you have to provide that remotely. So that actually, okay, that adds some complication, that adds some cost. You have to deal with the inevitable, again, security question constantly comes up as how do you manage the security of somebody who's in remote like that? How do I know if I don't have building access control, which was always one filter in a one building environment, I don't have a passcode or a thumbprint or biometrics or anything at Johnny's house. And so he can now do this. You know, this is clearly the enablement and the consistency of what the people are able to deliver in a teleworker environment is critical. The other part of it, though, is the cultural side, is the water cooler side, right? Is there is a cultural element of how you manage, in my case, an organization's 80% distributed, how you manage that, how you do the spontaneous kind of conversations. And this is actually where, you know, companies like ours really try and focus our efforts, is this is where you start to look at truly what unified communications is. There's times you want to use the telephone. There's times you want to use email, chat, instant messaging, video, conferencing, web collaborate, whatever. You need to have all of that available, and you need to pick the times when you can just pop an email versus call somebody on the phone versus look them in the eye, right? And then there are still, you have to have the ability to go into the office, wherever it is, and have the conversation. So the primary driver for the telework phenomenon is based on economics. I don't have to supply the infrastructure. And it's also based, what we're finding is on people's preferences, because now I can suddenly get access to technology that's not, or sorry, to talent and skills that's not geographically located where my building is. I can reach out to other places, which is why we did it. This is something that I think we haven't seen the government really sort of build on, but the ability to get access to people and talent and knowledge and subject matter expertise, that's probably a bigger win than the cost savings of actually putting a teleworker outside the building.
We got away from the mobile landscape a little faster than I wanted to, so we'll go there. But I also wanted to talk a little bit more about mobile productivity. My guest is Chris Hummel. He's with Siemens, the Chief Commercial Officer for Siemens Enterprise Communications. My guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose.
Are you ready to take a leadership role in your public service or nonprofit career? Become a leader at the forefront of modern government practices with a Master of Public Administration degree from Central Michigan University in Alexandria. This unique program is enriched with international content, a vital element in today's global economy. CMU's Master of Public Administration degree is NASPAA certified and the gold standard degree for public administrators.
I would recommend, if you work in local, state, or federal government and you're interested in learning about management, organizational leadership,
This is definitely a good program. It's a very strong program.
Learn how you can prepare for senior leadership positions with Central Michigan University's adult-friendly Master of Public Administration degree taught right here in Alexandria. Classes will be held at CMU's Alexandria Center. Go to cmich.edu/metrodc. That's cmich.edu/metrodc for more information or call 877-679-1268. Central Michigan University in Alexandria. Quality degrees, convenient formats. Certified operate by CHEV.
The $800,000 spending spree by GSA may seem like a lot of wasted money, but some experts say it's small potatoes when it comes to federal scandals. In our exclusive report, GSA Scandal in Perspective, Federal News Radio examines some of the biggest government embarrassments in recent history, including the $20 billion Air Force tanker scandal and as much as $60 billion in wasted money in Iraq and Afghanistan. Read our full report at federalnewsradio.com. Search scandals.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Chris Hummel, the Chief Commercial Officer of Siemens Enterprise Communications, is my guest on Industry Chatter today. One of the things that I didn't want to leave without talking about is the landscape of mobile technology and mobile productivity. We have talked not just on this show, but when this topic is addressed generally, focus primarily on laptop computers or their equivalents, tablet devices now, and smartphones. But 3 years ago, maybe, and 5 years ago for sure, there was no such thing as a commercially viable, commercially popular tablet device. Nobody really thought that such a thing would work. They'd been tried in the past and failed. And certainly nobody thought that they would ever make a lot of inroads on the enterprise. Now, of course, we know that that's completely wrong. What's the landscape look like in your mind 3 years from now or 5 years from now that I, as a federal CIO or federal manager in general, should be preparing for, should be expecting to see?
So the first thing is, you know, if as I was coming down here today, if I think into my briefcase, how many devices I have, right? I mean, my PDA, my phone, my tablet, my MP3 player, my laptop, all in my bag. My bag's gotten heavier. It should have gotten lighter and it should have gotten smaller, but instead it's gotten heavier. And this is kind of a metaphor for the complexity that the IT departments and staff are seeing, because it's not like I'm shifting. It's I have to support them all at once. The interesting thing, you know, sort of if you look at it, if I can go sort of 10, 20 years back to go 10, 20 years in the future, if I dare do that, but is historically in the public sector, we have built based on need, meaning so we have customized the development of technology specifically for the need, whether it be the military, obviously with DARPA and so on and so forth, or whether it be the health and human services or criminal justice and public safety. Today, it's kind of reversed, right? It used to be that those innovations would seep into the commercial market. Now it's the commercial market, which is doing a lot of the technology innovation, and the public sector is looking at how do I adopt those pieces and use them. And you do have this proliferation of devices. You do have all this specialized and platforms we were talking about before that I need to bring together. So the real revolution, and it's not 10, 20 years out. I would guess it's 12, 24, 36 maximum years out, is the user experience. Is actually how do I now make the experience that I have as an employee or a user on my mobile device the same as on my laptop, the same as on my television, the same as on any other sort of major device of communication that I use. And interestingly, just as an example, you know, we made a development decision in our engineering team 6 months ago that the mobile device, whether it be tablet or phone, is now going to be our default platform for development. You know, for 160 years from Dr. Werner von Siemens with the commercial telegraph, it was always a tabletop or a desktop device. We've just moved. Big sort of watershed moment for us is moved to make that. Making sure that user experience across how I use my telephone or my voice communication is more appropriate because I can do it through my computer. I can do it through all these different devices. The convergence of some of the devices where you'll start to hopefully see a slimming down. My briefcase won't be quite so heavy with so many things. And making sure that experience is consistent, whether I'm, as we talked about before, making a voice call or doing a collaboration session online or whether I'm in a video conference or anything else, the user interface has to be the same, but the user experience has to be the same as well. I need to be able to transfer from one to the other. You know, you see the commercials about the cable companies, you walk from room to room and watch the same movie at the same part. Think of it in that vein of, from a communications perspective, being able to do all that.
So the good news I think I hear in that, if I'm an IT pro at an agency, is my job will become much less gadget-centric in the foreseeable future. Is that a fair read on that?
I think that's true. I mean, some guys love to play with gadgets, so it's not good for everybody.
Two of them sitting here, I think.
I think so.
We're having this conversation.
But yes, I think from a positive standpoint, that yes, you will now be, the IT department will be focused more on building a platform, and that platform will then have multiple pieces that plug into it, but you'll be looking at kind of a communications infrastructure. The difficult part will now be that that's a transformation of the user experience. And we as human beings, whether we consider ourselves enlightened or not, have difficulty, most of us, adopting new ways of doing things. You know, we have some customers that are, for example, in the financial services market, and the trading platform, the traders in their hoot and holler systems, we put in this new great IP technology, super duper trading turret platform, et cetera, to change channels, being now software oriented. We had sort of a slider right on the screen, a touchscreen slider. And they said, no, we want physical buttons. We want to turn the dial to get from channel to channel. Well, why? You know, they would give us all the, I have fat fingers and I have all this and so on and so forth. But the reality was they just didn't want to change the way they operate. And they will over time and all that kind of stuff. And that's a great customer of ours, the one I'm talking about. But the idea is that change management, now the IT team is not going to be talking about technology. They're going to be talking about adoption, change management, user productivity.
That's the note that I made as you were speaking, is that they're going to be out of the technology business and into the experience management business.
And, you know, it's a really interesting because we're seeing seeds of it already happen. And I'll give you a kind of specific example. A lot of agencies are coming to us. We're a company like several others that has a heavy services department, right? And services, I don't mean just sort of break fix. I mean actually manage services, right? Take over. We can manage certain things for you. A lot of companies certainly have been doing this, whether it goes back to the outsourcing and all that kind of stuff, but they're really looking and saying, I am not an IT shop, and it is not my competency to be an IT shop. I need to have capability in my organization, whatnot, but I would need to bring in experts, and I need to make sure those experts are managing what I need, and then I'm managing the experts because my internal resources, as we're talking about, the IT not focused on the technology itself, but the use and adoption of that technology becomes the new mandate. And I think that can be a real win-win for everybody.
We'll talk about why you think that when we come back from the break. My guest is Chris Hummel of Siemens Enterprise Communications on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment.
Military families make great sacrifices so that we can be safe, secure, and free. That's why we at United Health Military and Veteran Services are so honored to have been selected to serve families in the TRICARE West region starting in April 2013. United Healthcare serves over 78 million Americans nationwide. We have the experience and expertise to make healthcare better for our servicemen and women and their families. United Healthcare's expansive network provides access to hundreds of thousands of physicians and specialists. We focus on making it possible for healthcare teams to work together and share important information about your care. And at United Healthcare, we use innovative technologies to make sure you get the right care from the right doctor for your needs. Military families help keep us safe. So at United Healthcare, helping military families isn't just a job, it's an honor. To learn more, visit UnitedHealthMilitary.com.
Mark Herman from Booz Allen Hamilton commented during the panel discussion titled The Cloud as a Shroud, Fraud in a Digital Age, brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
The commodity availability of scalable storage and processing nodes, basically on demand, has made it economically feasible to expand the scope of data evaluated in real time or in near real time. And these are allows you to make timely and actionable conclusions.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Information is flowing from more sources than ever before. Cloud-enabled enterprises can collect and analyze terabytes of data by leveraging the new technology. They can rapidly analyze an entire data set, developing deeper insights than what could be gained from looking at only a portion of the data, thus enabling better decisions made much faster. Booz Allen Hamilton believes secure, scalable, and automated cloud-based solutions can help derive actionable information faster. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
How can we determine which armed aerial scout helicopter is best for the U.S. warfighter? By proving it in competition. EADS North America is ready to prove that our AAS-72X is superior to any other armed aerial scout helicopter out there. So let the competition begin. Saying you're the best isn't good enough for our warfighters. You need to prove it. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Federal News Radio supports GITEC's Shared IT Services Summit May 20th through 22nd in Baltimore. The summit will focus on comprehensive examples of government agencies delivering and using shared IT services, and will feature presentations from government IT visionaries such as U.S. CIO Stephen Van Roekel, DHS CIO Richard Spires, and many more. Registrations open to government and industry IT executives. Government employees attend for free, so sign up now at GITEC.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our industry chatter guest today is Chris Hummel, Chief Commercial Officer for Siemens Enterprise Communications. And you used the term win-win before we broke, and that's a term that everybody loves to hear. And I wonder why you think it applies in the particular context that you talked about.
So we were talking about this revolution in the user experience, mm-hmm. right? Which, you know, we could talk on and on about and get into. But the win for the individual, for the employee in this context, and in many ways also for the citizen, is really a flexibility in the way that they use technology. They get to use it in a way that actually makes them productive because they're a part of it. They're not being handed it. They're a part of that decision making. And what we've seen, interestingly, is it really energizes the employee base as well, because it makes them more positive about this adoption of technology. From the CIO's perspective, or the IT staff or department or technology staff, you really start to still support all those key criteria you have: security, resilience, scalability, cost management, administration, all those kind of things, provisioning of new users. All you get to support all that as well. So this becomes a win-win situation in terms of you can balance almost what seems like oil and water, kind of these demanding users and empowered users with this requirement at the center to manage the IT appropriately.
We have gotten about 50 minutes into this conversation, and we have not talked about cloud computing at all. I think I've set a record because the cloud, of course, is one of the biggest buzzwords in the federal government right now. What's the practical application for the cloud when it comes to enterprise communications?
Well, so interestingly enough, for the last 50 minutes, we have been talking about the cloud. We just haven't used the word cloud.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's the key element here is, you know, when you talk about cloud, you're not talking about a new technology. You're talking about a new consumption model. Right, you have companies like Salesforce.com, which have, you know, really innovated in the way the business model, and others that are moving in that direction as well. You have companies like us that have really introduced it on the communication side. We can get into all kinds of conversations about multi-tenant, single instance, all the technology terms. But the reality is, cloud is about consuming the applications, the data, the IT resources in a way that hides the complexity from the person who doesn't want to deal with the complexity and puts your best people who know about the complexity and can deal with it to manage it. And that often means that you start to get individual agencies might not be able to support their own cloud, so they need to look at actual cooperation. This goes back to shared service centers, which have been obviously a big part of government. There's not that much difference between shared services and a cloud model. It just changes the way the shared service is delivered and so on and so forth. So clearly, I think cloud is another one of these mega trends, which we are not going back from. Mm-hmm. It is the way that people consume the technology nowadays. It offers a lot of financial advantages in terms of not making big upfront payments, but buying in digestible pieces and all those kind of things. And again, can support everything we've talked about today. I just was trying not to be a marketing guy.
And you did a fine job of it. I'm grateful for your time today. I enjoyed talking to you. Chris Hummel is Chief Commercial Officer of Siemens Enterprise Communications. Thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you very much, Francis.
You can hear my conversation with Chris archived later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is coming in just a few moments on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And you can listen for industry chatter every Thursday afternoon in the 3 o'clock hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.